welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kalb, and today I'm pleased to have my guest, Joan Newcomb, with her book, Tapestry of Time. Joan is a spiritual teacher, a spiritual healer, a clairvoyant, and a certified professional life coach. She started her training with mystery schools and studied at Findhorn in Scotland, and is now, progressing into the realm of teaching and exploring new concepts. And her book, I was attracted to her book because it is about the illusionary nature of time, which I think all clairvoyants eventually discover because of the non-limitation of clairvoyant work within any time-space dimension. And it certainly is very, very interesting to explore this, and she's explored it in the form of a semi-true tale of soulmates and a fully true tale of spirit's embodiment on this physical plane. Welcome, Joan. How are you doing?
Great. It's wonderful to be here.
So I understand you have a radio show as well as doing all of this.
Yes, my radio show is called Adventures in Density and Effort, and it's on Contact Talk Radio on Tuesdays at, 6 p.m. Eastern. And Adventures in Density and Effort is a playful look at life on playground Earth. So if you think from a spiritual perspective, we're light, we're expansive, we are definitely nonlinear when it comes to time. And when you're incarnated on this physical plane, it's density and effort. This is what physical form is. So it's a playful look at that.
Well, great. I had interviewed Peter last week, and when I was doing my announcements of this week's radio show, he had said he'd just been on your show. So that was fun.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know how great it is to have a radio show then. You get to talk to all these fascinating people and learn all this new stuff. So it certainly has been one of the highlights of my life, having a radio show. I've really enjoyed it. So would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about how you got involved in spirituality and looking at consciousness, space, and time?
Yes. Well, the very beginning of it was I was actually thought I was destined to be an actress, and I had actually went to drama school in London when I was 18, 19 years old. I went to the same drama school that Pierce Brosnan and Colin Firth went to. And circumstances conspired that I ended up back in the United States, and I've had a boyfriend in drama school who'd been hit by a car, and there were several other things that went on at the same time. So I decided to take a year off from acting. And within that, actually, it ended up being 2 years, but within that 2 years, I had discovered this mystery school. I'd moved to Seattle, mm-hmm. and I ended up going through 5 years of training with this mystery school that was based on both Christian and Eastern mysticism. Mm-hmm. And I worked for them on and off for 11 years. And then I discovered, I taught classes and everything from like the early 1980s onwards. Mm-hmm. But when I left, then I discovered Findhorn, which expanded my experience even more so. And a couple of years after that is when I wrote the first drafts of this book and its sequel. So, and now, in the last couple years, like about 4 years ago, I discovered matrix energetics, which works with morphic fields and actually has some techniques for time travel, not necessarily, you know, rematerializing your body, but transforming physically, resetting your body back before injuries happen. And I've seen some amazing things happen with that. So it's kind of interesting how it's all come full circle.
Right. So what gave you the idea to write a novel with these concepts?
Well, the basic story plot of this novel came from something I had written in junior high school in the early 70s based on Star Trek. And then 15 years later, maybe 20 years later, my youngest kid went into preschool, and I suddenly had time in my day to start writing. And when I tried to write it as a Star Trek novel, I didn't gel. And the moment I put it into real time, mm-hmm. suddenly the story took off and wrote itself. So it was a very weird and strange feeling because it really, to me, it felt real at the time that I was just sort of recording these events. I was already a metaphysical teacher and at the time, so as the story was unfolding, and there you know, there's a whole erotic aspect to the story. So I was mm-hmm. I was having conversations with, you know, source, God, the universe, or however you would call it. I was talking to the universe mm-hmm. as I was doing this and saying, you know, I don't think I can publish this while my parents are alive because it's not way too much sustenance. And the information I got back at that time was that this information is important, and it's coming through on lots of different channels, but somebody would be attracted to reading this book that may not pick up something by Deepak Chopra.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
So it was meant to, you know, you can read it as just a read and toss novel, or you mm-hmm. can read it over and over, get the deeper layers of it. And so it was really meant to reach as many different people, to just sort of plant seeds of awareness about that things aren't as linear as we seem, as it seems.
Yeah, and there's an important message in here too about sexuality and connecting with one's soulmate, or whatever term you want to use, that brings both of you to a higher level of awareness, which I've interviewed most of the tantric sex people and who the leaders. In fact, my video production company did some work with a video on tantric sex as well. And it really is a path to consciousness. And especially when you're involved with people who are more spiritually, you know, evolved than you are, you have a great opportunity to learn. And that's how Paul finds himself in this novel. He doesn't really understand everything that his significant other and his son can do, but certainly he's open to learning, which is good. And I think that, you know,
yeah.
The teachers do come forth. They're not always in physical bodies, as you know. I mean, many of our teachers are not in a physical form, but certainly we have teachers available all around us.
Yes, and you made a good point there about, you know, mentioning the guests you've had with tantric, and that I think especially in the West here, we tend to, you know, fall back on this myth about being celibate or celibacy, like Jesus was celibate, which was
mm-hmm.
actually not true.
Right.
But as a, you know, it's like conserving mm-hmm. your energy in order to make you more spiritual. But actually, all that does is block you. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
in realizing you can be spiritual and sexual at the same time, all of this helps clear your space, raise your vibratory level, so that you can have you know, more of your consciousness coming through your physical form. So that was a very important point to make there, too, yes.
Yeah, and I think some of the, you know, the caveats against, you know, promiscuous sex is primarily not to waste your energy, because that's a great way to lower your energy if you have sex with the wrong people. You know, there are some traditions, like the Carlos Castaneda's and Don Juan, think that you give energy for 7 years if you have sex with people who are, you know, more energy vampires. And that's probably true, because when we actually do spiritual work to look at where we're losing our energy, our sexual encounters are often what comes up. So I would say, you know, we're not advocating just going out and having sex with anybody, but certainly not having the thought form that celibacy is the only path.
Yeah.
You know, it's a path for some people. I mean, you know, you have to go within and find out what you know, what your inner guidance is, but you have to be careful believing that celibacy is the only path to higher consciousness, because it certainly isn't.
Yes.
So go ahead.
Oh no, I was anticipating the next question, so bring it on.
Okay. Alrighty. I wanted to mention my friend Tricia McCannon, who just had her new book come out on Jesus and his role in the mystery schools. It came out in Hampton Roads, and I don't know if you've seen it yet, but this book takes us through the early years of Jesus and all his involvement in all the mystery schools and what he learned, and when, before he went to the mystery schools, how he was not really in control of the powers that he had, and that's why his family sent him to these mystery schools. And so, you know, you spoke before that there were misunderstandings about Jesus. And I think the misunderstandings about Jesus were actually quite large, and only that part of Jesus' life that the that fit in with the agenda of the church was allowed to come out, and many of the books were not allowed to come out. And so I think that as this comes out, people will realize that Jesus, who is, you know, one of our major teachers and spiritual leaders of at least the Western world, was not what he was kind of painted to be. And so that will help open people up too, because I think when they understand what the mystery schools were all about and how the sexual energy is taught within the mystery schools, that they will understand that the sexual energy is very sacred and is very much an important path. And that's what I really liked about your book was that it brought that into it. As a plastic surgeon, I specialize in two areas, actually. I specialize in complications of breast implants, and I have a new book out called The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, which for the last 15 years I've been dealing with people all over the world with problems. And this book reveals the science of it, and of course the breast being part of the sacred sexual part of the female energy. And then the other area I've gone into was labiaplasty and clitoral hood reduction, which is the other end of things that has been forbidden. And basically I treat patients from all over the country, California, Colorado, New York, Florida, for labia and other aesthetic surgery of the female genitalia. So I actually am quite involved in the female sexual liberation part of this consciousness movement, so at the surgical level, which is interesting. So I thought I'd add that to indicate my interest in your bringing this out of the closet, so to speak. Would you like to talk a little bit about the story of the book and how the time aspect weaves in and out of it?
Let me see. Without wanting to give away some of the surprises in the book.
But the main
character is an architect named Paul, and he's, you know, a regular human guy, and like all of us, most of us, you know, he lives through time linearly. So, you know, he was born, and he, you know, and he gets older in a very linear fashion. The people that he interacts with are time travelers, and the two that are in this book they're able to travel through time. They do have some restrictions in which they can't go more than 50 years into the past or 50 years into the future, because their vibration is too high for that far past and too low for the future. And the other element of it is that they don't, in this regard, have free will. So they can, they're sent on assignments, and their purpose really is to raise the vibration in the area that they're at. The second one actually has more of a stabilizing effect, but the first one raises the vibration in an area.
Shakes things up.
And, yeah. Well, and that's the thing, is that if this person stays too long in one area, there are, you know, earthquakes or storms, or there's, you know, there's geological, I guess, consequences.
Right.
So they're both in physical form, but yet they're beyond the linear limitations. Mm-hmm. There's a third character who's in a later book, who is part human and two parts human actually, and so has free will to willfully move herself through time. But and so I guess we're a couple things about this book and to touch back on what you were talking about with Jesus and mystery schools. I mean, one of the things that Jesus said that people don't fully comprehend is what I do, you can do also.
Right.
So that's right down to the same miracles and things like that. And so the potential that the time travelers in this book show, we actually have, as human beings, we have the same potential. And when there are groups of people, our vibrations together can affect things. And there's group manifestations when you're in a place where something like an earthquake happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just something to think about how our personal energies contribute to our environment is another little sideline of the book.
And it may be, you know, California has had less severe earthquakes than it might have normally had or projected to have because of certain spiritual work that goes on in California. I think I've always felt that that was, and also I'm not sure that there aren't other influences outside the human realm that keep the place more stable, because that certainly is an area that could be affected.
It's true, and if you know, if you kind of want to stereotype areas of the country, California has been the place where a lot of new things start. It's kind of known to be, you know, a source of people very focused on higher consciousness. The other thing I look at, I've always looked at around the world, when there has been something, and we're talking about earthquakes particularly, but when there has been like an earthquake happened, it's interesting to see people's responses to it. But you know, this also happened, in Haiti and other places. It's like it's brought out the best in us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to see what the group manifestation is. I'm not necessarily using the word term manifestation in that, you know, well, Haiti created that earthquake. But when you
maybe
look
it just
at
failed to prevent it, you know. It may not have created it, but certainly it might have failed to prevent it because it was more, there's a lot more voodoo and a lot more dark magic both in New Orleans and in Haiti than in other parts of the world. I mean, I have friends of mine are relief workers in Haiti for many, many years. So I'm real familiar with a lot of the, you know, the darker side of Haiti. And New Orleans, too. I have friends in New Orleans and been in New Orleans. You know, it may be that they just didn't have the balancing of the other side to prevent the problem. And maybe many areas have potential problems. I mean, it could be around the world. There's certainly areas of Indonesia, areas in China, areas in the Ring of Fire. All of these areas are unstable geologically. So, you know, it's just interesting to see how human consciousness might tip the balance. I don't think it causes the earthquake. I think that's caused by the geological instabilities and the solar flares and maybe some electromagnetic things that we contribute to. But certainly, certainly, it might prevent problems. It might stabilize things.
Well, what I also see is there's a higher reason why, you know, something, why anyone is in a place at a certain given period of time.
Right.
And in the 80s, I used to subscribe to this newsletter, and I blanked on what it was, but it was written by a person who was very successful at predicting earthquakes,
mm-hmm.
And they would predict a series of earthquakes throughout the year, and it would go around the Ring of Fire. And, you know,
right.
And sure enough, when you would go follow through the year, you'd go, yeah, there's one in, you know, there's one in Japan, and then there was one in, you know, South America and one in California. And I live in the Seattle area. And what I would find is with the people I worked with and the clients and students I had, I would watch us, as a group, people go through very intense growth phases. It's like a lot of stuff building up.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I would notice is that we would each individually resolve it. We would, you know, work through our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever they'd have a earthquake predicted for Seattle at that particular time, it wouldn't happen. But, you know, the next one would happen in Alaska or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it gave me the idea that, you know, if you work on your individual stuff, you can contribute to the stability of the whole. And then the times that we were stuck, you know, collectively stuck, but everybody had an individual story about it, that's when something like an earthquake would happen, and it would shake things up in our own lives. And so when I was talking about bringing out the best, or it's an opportunity to look at and rise to the challenge. So, you know, giving Haiti as an example, you know, look at the response that the rest of the world had as well, and even if you weren't physically Haiti, it gave an opportunity for people, it provided an opportunity for people to give, and, you know, and it was really kind of a heart-opening experience for people.
Right.
So that's when I look at the bigger picture of, you know, why something happens, I don't usually go to, well, there was a fault line there. I look at sort of like, well, what's the collective consciousness of the area, and what's the greater lesson, or what's being brought out.
Yeah, and then if you look at New Orleans, because it's the same with hurricanes, it's really no different. I mean, it's just that they're above ground rather than below ground. If you look at New Orleans, if you look at Haiti, you know, a few years from now, you may see a very different rebuilding. You know, the consciousness that rebuilds it may be at a higher level than the consciousness that was there during the quake, you know, the overall consciousness. It would be interesting to see. I think New Orleans is different now that it's been rebuilt. I really do. I think that there's, I don't have statistics for you, but I bet there's less crime rate. I bet there's more community. The people that chose to go back in, I think, were led back in. It certainly seemed that way, that many of the people that weren't supposed to be there left, you know. And so maybe it's a concentration of negativity that was kind of broken up. And then when the people came back in to rebuild it, they had higher vibration and higher stability. And then of course they were paying more attention to the, you know, the physical things, like the, you know, I'm sure the government started paying more attention to the, you know, the levees and the other things that they needed to pay attention to, that maybe got ignored, because there was, you know, it's a great deal of corruption in New Orleans before this. I mean, it had a history of corruption. So
something, you know. I have been stepping back and looking at this all as a clairvoyant, and seeing the raise in consciousness that is happening. I've interviewed a lot of people on my show and talked a lot about the changes that are happening leading up to 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And what I see that is happening and is going to happen is that there's a transformation of human consciousness, that we are all shifting to the next level. And one of the things that's been accelerating and happening now is anything that is discordant, as well as anything that we have had a solid vested interest in, is that you know, a belief that it's solid and real when it's really an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Those things also are crumbling and falling away. And so if you're really attached to, you know, investing in real estate or the stock market, you've seen that happen already. Or
right.
If you're working at a job that, you know, that you've been doing for years just to pay the bills, but it really doesn't make your heart sing, it's not really making use of your true abilities or your spiritual purpose for being here, you're more likely to get laid off.
That's true.
Do this multiple times if they didn't get the lesson the first time. And so what I'm seeing is both on both on an earthquake, hurricane, disaster level, but on economy and other kinds of levels, the same things are happening that are they're breaking down and breaking through processes.
Mm-hmm.
as a collective, as a worldwide consciousness, are moving to this higher level of awareness and this higher level of being. My belief is that it's going to be like a 100th monkey syndrome. You know, it's like when there'll be a tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
Of enough of us will have shifted to that level that it'll be an instantaneous transformation for everybody. And that once we get there, it will be a much happier experience. I also believe that the people who are struggling the most now will have that shift and when it shows up, it'll be effortless. And they'll also probably not know that they were different before. You know, suddenly all the Fox News correspondents will be liberals. Right now we're viewing things through the lens of, you know, an apocalypse and all these terrible things happening. But that's how we perceive things when we don't know how to expand ourselves into stepping into a new way of being. It's our primal experience to respond with fear and, you know, think that we're dying. But all we are doing is really stepping into something new. So So wanted to reassure people that, no, we're not going to all, you know, get hit by a meteor or something, but that we're going through puberty, I guess, that sort of awkward, painful stage before we mature. And linking back to talking about Jesus, I was just talking to someone the other day about this shift in our conscious awareness and our relationship to cosmic consciousness, God, source, however you want to talk about. If you look at the Old Testament, the relationship with a higher power was, you know, it was this big, scary being in the sky who was vengeful and threw down frogs and plagues, and it was a real distant relationship. And then if you look at when the shift that came, when I call him an avatar, Jesus came, it was a different relationship. It was a closer relationship, a more intimate relationship, but still it was like a parent-child relationship.
Right.
And one of the things I see now is that we're stepping to a new level of responsibility of seeing that energy not outside ourselves but within ourselves. This is not an ego thing, but it's realizing that we are the divine. We are consciousness inside. That's our next shift here is if you're aware of yourself as a higher consciousness, then you behave differently in the world. And that's kind of what
understand karma, you be a lot differently. The spiritual principles are very important, but I think the main thing also that people need to understand is that the institutions are crumbling. The institutions of law, politics, medicine, you know, business, international relations, a lot of the negativity is being exposed and things are crumbling that need to crumble, but there's a rebuilding happening at the same time. Spiritual holistic medicine is getting stronger and stronger. Preventative medicine now with the Obamacare is being introduced, kind of is something that insurance has to pay for. I mean, that's a real revolution there. The things that are breaking down are things that need to break down. So we don't really have to worry about all of our institutions crumbling because there's a rebuilding going on at the same time. And there's also a balancing. Like you said, the older thought of a patriarch, male-dominated world is being replaced with more of a balance. I'm part of a book called God is Shift, Women Leading for a Change. It's got many of the female leaders in the world, Michelle Obama, Oprah, J.K. Rowling's, Jane Fonda, Shirley MacLaine, Angelina Jolie, Barbara Walters. These kind of women are speaking about the goddess aspect and how that balances the male aspect. So what I see is that we have male versus female balancing, so we're more androgynous. We have less, particular race dominating the politics and economics of the planet. We have more of a androgynous within the racial spectrum of humanity. It's just a balancing of just almost everything, and that puts us to a less of a polarity. And I think that's incredibly important with the shift that's going to be happening, or is happening, but is going to be happening even more, is that we're not so polarized. You know, it's not male versus female, black versus white, you know, all the us versus them. So that's what I see happening. Even in the military, I have a lot of contacts in the military. I was in the Air Force for 13 years. And the battles that traditionally went on are now are now getting better, which is interesting.
Yes, but you know, higher consciousness is seeping into all aspects, even surprising places like the military are becoming more balanced in this way.
Yeah. So you have a couple of books that you're working on. You have a sequel coming out. Is that right?
Yes, because this is actually it's a trilogy. And so the second book is in the midst of being final edited, and the third book is has been gestating in my head. It's starting to take so I have to start putting things down.
There you go.
I started this process when my youngest had started preschool, and I suddenly had time to start writing, and He's now a freshman at Vassar, so that kind of tells you how long
it's right. Well, you can't really hurry some of these works. You know, they come when they're supposed to, and like with my book, The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, it was gestating for a long time, but it just simply wasn't safe to publish it. And I was really worried when I published it, because I'm going up against a couple of billion-dollar industries that have, at least in the past, not been real friendly toward people who went up against them before. And I was really relieved to find that last month they found lymphoma cells around certain breast implants, including especially textured breast implants. And they formed a committee or a panel with the FDA, plastic surgery, oncology, and epidemiology to study this. And all of a sudden I feel a lot better about my book coming out because, you know, I won't be the only person they're looking at. They're going to have other problems to consider. Within the medical community. So I think timing is very important, as you say. You know, it's you might have published this book 10 years ago and nobody would have a clue what you're talking about, and it wouldn't have had any success whatsoever. You know, it's even though it's the same book, you know, it's the consciousness has to be ready for it.
Yes, that's true. You mentioned about breast implants. Isn't it true that if you have a breast implant, then it makes mammograms virtually impossible to read? Doesn't it interfere with mammograms?
Well, it depends on the type of implant. Silicone has more of a problem with that than saline. In fact, there's an article published in one of the journals of radiology saying that they've been radiating women's breasts way too much because the silicone actually will reflect the radiation energy. So the breast gets radiated on the way in, and then also this other radiation it bounces off the implant. And so they're actually giving women an overdose of radiation when they do silicone. So I think that's more of a problem because we know that x-rays can be associated with cancer. Saline, if you're very, very flat-chested like I was, I had a bunch of chest x-rays and never developed breast buds. My implants actually bring my breast tissue out so that I could get a mammogram. I've never gotten a mammogram, but it would be better. They could actually see my breast tissue, whereas they wouldn't be able to without it. The average woman, probably a saline implant increases what they see if she's small, but maybe hides tissue, especially if the implant is above the muscle rather than below the muscle. So there's just like anything, there's many, many factors to consider. But I will say that if women have breast implants, the studies that were done, their cancers, if they form, tend to be at a higher degree of spread. In other words, more of them spread to the lymph nodes before they're discovered. So that's a problem. But the really great news with implants is you have 4 times less the risk of developing breast cancer if you have breast implants in. And so for women who have a really high family history, the BRCA gene or you know, all their first-degree relatives that are female have breast cancer, getting breast implants is a way to help decrease their risk, along with other lifestyle changes, of course. But it is a definite reason to get breast implants. And if you have cancer, I've been a plastic surgeon for probably about 28 years, and I've never seen a local recurrence underneath a tissue expander or implant, whereas with tram flaps and other flaps, we see them frequently because the local recurrence rate is about 20%. So when this data came out and was published, I knew it because, you know, you look back on your clinical experience and you know that something about these implants keeps breast cancer from recurring locally. It does not keep it from recurring, you know, in metastatic disease, though. So you have to do other things for that. But cancer is very interesting. You know, cancer is not just in the physical. Some is. I mean, if you put your hand under radiation, you might get cancer like Madame Curie did. But many cancers have a spiritual component that is just fascinating. And that's why we have spontaneous remission, because there is a spiritual component. And I'm sure in your readings you've seen this.
Yes, and I've been an energy healer since the early 80s as well, and one of the things mm-hmm. that my original training was taught that, you know, if you hold on to energy for 2 years, it manifests physically.
Right.
So, you know, you always look at then, okay, you know, you step back and you look at, you know, the energetic patterns that contribute to somebody having a cancer in their space. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you talk about cancer, there's such a morphic field around cancer itself. And in a lot of cases, you know, well, actually, we all have cancerous cells in our bodies at any time, but our immune systems are fighting them off.
Right.
So, you know, and then a lot of times when someone does discover, and I'm not specifically talking about breast cancer, but sometimes when someone finds a cancerous tumor, it's been growing there for like 10 or 15 years.
Right.
And
it doesn't have to be new, exactly.
And so, you know, I think about that in a lot of cases, you know, that it's helpful to take your time to research and really look into, you know, the treatments and coming up with a balance of treatments, you know,
mm-hmm.
psychological, holistic, as well as medical, like
oh,
a balance
important.
Of treatment approach it. And I've had a couple of relatives who've had cancer, and my husband is a cancer survivor. And it was interesting with my relatives because it was really a battlefield mentality, sort of a
mm-hmm.
Civil War battlefield mentality.
Right, yeah.
You know, cut first to amputate the wound.
We're going to fight the war on cancer.
And you know, more people have actually died of chemotherapy than they have of cancer. So, it's,
right.
You know, there's a lot of... So what I was thinking as you were talking, it was like, oh my goodness, look at how the medical field has matured as well, and that there's,
mm-hmm.
you know, we have better ways to look at things and respond to things now,
mm-hmm.
and it would be nice if that morphic field about cancer, you know, shifted so that not everybody is going out and getting double mastectomies just because
mm-hmm.
their mother has cancer. No.
Well, they aren't anymore. Actually, that was in the 80s. We did a lot of that preventative stuff then, but that's really not being done now, which is good. But I will tell you that, you know, we've run a cancer clinic here for many years. I think we started in 99, and we have the most interesting patients. They come from all over the world, actually. And our patients are drawn here. You know, they're obviously guided here spiritually. I mean, you don't just go... Basically, what I tell patients is the two most important things in cancer, well, there's three most important things in cancer. One is, the first one, which I always explore, is know your death date. Because many people choose to go out with cancer, and if your death date is truly your death date, and you're going to go out with cancer, there's really no reason to do a lot of anything other than just enjoy the time you have left. The second thing is, if your death date is beyond the cancer, you need to determine if you want to live, because we do have choices. I think many of us have windows where we can leave, and I think it's about every 7 years in some cases. So if you have a window in which you can leave, you can choose to leave with will, you know, free will, and in which case you may want to make different choices in fighting this cancer. And then the third thing is really just what lessons are involved with the cancer. I've interviewed most of the major physicists that actually understand spontaneous remission, like Amit Goswami and some of the other founders of the superstring theory. And when you understand that there are higher dimensional reasons that people get cancer, some of them are familial, some of them manifest, you know, every generation or every other generation within families, because there's a family energy that needs to be released. Some are just pure, simple revenge. I had one patient die because his wife had left him in a previous life, and he vowed to leave her in this life, and he died of cancer. You know, just very interesting reasons that you actually get cancer. Some people get cancer because they fail to learn their spiritual lessons again and again and again, and so their guides and higher self just take them out and start over again. You know, I've seen that happen. But I think we have to use those of us who are medical intuitives and clairvoyants to look at all of the different scenarios and choose what's right best for the patient. And then I tell the patient that there is a way out of this. I mean, given that their death date isn't imminent, there is a way out of this, but you have to follow your guidance to get there. And if you go to, you know, say a famous clinic and the doctor says you have 6 weeks to live and you believe them, Larry Dawsey calls that medical hexing, which is something right. that we try not to do, but doctors do. Many doctors are trying to help the family and the patient and really believe that they have 6 weeks to live. It's not always, it's out of ignorance rather than out of anything else. But as long as you believe you have 6 weeks to live, you know, what I see is these people die in 6 weeks, and then on life review they go, oh, gee, you know, I had another 10 years, and this is all the stuff I missed. You know, gee, you know, maybe I'm not going to believe authority again. You know, maybe I'm going to go within and see what my inner guidance has to say about how much I've got to live. But people have lived, you know, taking Laetrile. They've lived taking asparagus, eating asparagus. They've lived, I mean, there's all sorts of things out there that can help you overcome cancer. And the trick is to follow your own guidance to see what it is. You know, I mean, I think we all have a way out of it. If we would have to have a way out of it if it's not our death date, think about it. It wouldn't be logical. It wouldn't be our death date. I mean, our death date would be further in if we didn't have a way out of it.
Yeah, that's a very good point to make. To realize that just because, you know, your doctor or specialist has a certain amount of statistics that say that if you've got this kind of tumor, you have, you know, this percentage in 5 years.
Right.
Realize that you do have the free will to write the script, and that, you know, there's always stories of, you know, spontaneous remission or things outside the box. If you approach it with an open mind, then you have open doors to infinite possibilities. I was thinking about Chris Carr, who was on the Oprah show, and she's written, you know, Crazy Sexy Cancer,
mm-hmm.
and how she's gotten to the point where she's living. She has a very slow growing form of cancer, but she's got, you know, 24 spots on her liver, and she's got several spots on her lungs, and so she has developed an extremely healthy lifestyle,
right.
Totally, you know, redirected from the party girl she was, you know, when this all started,
mm-hmm.
and so she was a great example of looking at and breaking through that you know, huge morphic field of, you know, this is going to kill you kind of thing. And I think that's the point you were making, it's like gives you an opportunity to really look at this energy and then step through it to create a completely different reality. And that's,
mm-hmm.
you know, looping back to the whole 2012, that's what is happening more and more now, is that the energy fields are changing, and things like karma that we thought were solid and real are dissolving and shifting. You know, and Amit Goswami, I interviewed him as well, you know, talked about, that this is all energy, and that, you know, this chair
yeah.
is not a chair, and that camera is not a camera. Well, this is a holographic reality, and so it's a much more like the energy of quantum physics, that everything is random and can show up and not show up, as opposed to Einstein trying to find a theory of relativity that this all makes sense and one
yeah.
thing leads to the next.
Well,
my energy work has changed from that, because I used to have a very solid and grounded form of energy work, and that really was, you know, based on gravity in some ways.
Right.
And I'm finding that at times there is no gravity. It's very mind-blowing, and at the same time, doing matrix energetics. I was with a group of healers who had worked on somebody who had cancer, and they'd gotten to this point where the tumors were all dropping off.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have been someone who used matrix to set a bone, and so the x-rays were different a half an hour apart.
Mm-hmm.
The person
right.
with cancer, by the way, ended up, you know, it looked like everything was going great, and then suddenly he died of an undiscovered tumor in his throat. So
mm-hmm.
I was thinking about, you know, what you were saying, it's like not just looking at your death date, but looking at, you know, what's the blockage behind it, and isn't that the ultimate, you know, having a blockage
right.
in your throat affects your communication, you know, talks about your communication, but also between you and your body.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, the first spontaneous remission that I was shown, I was actually 24, and I was operating on a 22-year-old who had a lymphoma in his chest, actually had surgery on it and had clips in his chest, but he had a recurrence in his abdomen, the size bigger than a grapefruit. And so we took him to mm-hmm. surgery, opened him up, and we had a recent CAT scan showing this. So this was in the 70s. Yeah, it was in the 70s. Anyway, so we opened him up, and there was no tumor in his abdomen. I couldn't find it. You know, I'm sitting there going, what's wrong? You know, I can't find it. So I close him back up, go call radiology, and, of course, they're not in yet because they don't come in until 9. So anyway, I go out and talk to his family. I say, well, I've got some good news and some bad news. You know, the good news is we didn't find anything, and the bad news is he's had a procedure, you know. And so when radiology comes in, they show me that it's absolutely him because the clips in his chest show up on the scan. So this kid, within a week, dissolved, and I mean no trace of a tumor bigger than a grapefruit. And this is not the first time I've seen it. That was the first time I saw it, but it's not the last time I've seen it. So I can appreciate that tumors can disappear within, we don't know how long, but certainly within days. And so reality is not what it seems to be. And it was interesting, I had a 3-star general while I was in the military give me a book on the Brazilian psychic surgeons, you know, and what they were doing. So, you know, consciousness will get to you even if it's through a 3-star general, what you need to know for what you need to learn later in life. And of course at that time I was an intern studying to be a surgeon, and yet here I had this book on psychic surgery and all of the really amazing things that these other people were doing. So that kind of helped break up my third dimensional framework of what I thought was possible very early in my career. So, but I think we need to do it in terms of, you know, in terms of the general population and certainly within medicine, so we quit hexing people medically.
So yes, Larry Doxey's books too. It's you know the power of words, you know, and
right.
that you know, doctors or scientists, and really the best scientists are the ones who remain curious and open and
mm-hmm.
are looking for the new doorways of possibility. So it's really interesting that there's such a limiting point of view on how to treat things or how things are. You know,
mm-hmm.
my mother, who's now 83, when she was in her 20s, her doctor prescribed cigarettes for her nerves.
Right.
So, you know,
well, don't call me then.
How awareness has changed since, you know, 1940.
Right, that's
so,
true. Well, we're coming up at the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Yes. So the best way to find out about me and the different things I do besides my radio show and my book, I'm also a mystic mentor coach. So it's sort of a mystical coaching, as well as doing readings, and I do matrix energetics. You can go to my website, which is www.joannewcomb.com. That's JOANNEWCOMB.com. And there's links to emailing me and contacting me and finding out my different things. It's all at my website.
Well, I want to tell people I really enjoyed this book, and I'm looking forward to the next two coming out. I'll definitely read them, and hopefully I can have you back on the show for those. Next week, we're interviewing Richard Smalley with The Dice Game of Shiva, and then we have Dr. Hildegard Staninger back for a toxicology update on, you know, basically the she's an environmental toxicologist that helps keep an eye on what we've got going on and what we can do about it. And then we have Dr. David Burno, The Language of Pain, Finding Words, Compassion, and Relief, the 1st of May. We have Amit Goswami back on the 22nd of May. And on the 15th of May, we have Curing the Incurable with Holistic Medicine. That's a book I'm about to start reading, Dr. George Giorgio. We have our Noetic Science meeting on the third Thursday of every month. On April 15th, I'm presenting The Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change. And Dr. Brad Gould is doing his wellness up lecture on vitamin D on the 22nd at the Millennium Office. Thank you very much for joining us. We've been here with Joan Newcomb and her book Tapestry of Time, a very interesting novel which brings in consciousness, brings in the nature of time, which I'm incredibly interested in. And we look forward to her next two books. Anyway, Joan, thanks so much for joining us today. It was great.
Thanks a lot for having me. It's a great show.
All righty. Well, we'll see you next week. Temple of Health Radio Show.
I'm sick and tired.